everybody. Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm going to be joined by my colleague Todd Rosiak in just one second. You're also going to hear from Kurt Hoge at the end of this podcast, which I'll explain in a minute. The Milwaukee Brewers, of course, finishing the week 5-2. They take 2 of 3 from the Arizona Diamondbacks. When I had my conversation with Todd, we were unable to find a time that worked. He's got to get up early in the morning to get to St. Louis for the five-game series that gets going on Monday. So he we had to record before Sunday's game. So this is just a little teaser about that, and noting that the Brewers actually played quite well. They won the game 3-2, a little bit of a high wire act, but they do come away with a big win to win the series, and that leaves them 5-2 for the week. Brandon Sproat only lasted 4 innings. It wasn't his best outing. It was a little tough. Even mentioned that at the tail end of the podcast I do with Todd. We have the first inning has gotten underway. The Brewers gave up a first inning run. But of course, runs were at a premium. Jake Bowers with a huge 2-run homer. Joey Ortiz with a single that ends up accounting for the winning run. Gary Sanchez, who had moved up on a fly ball from second to third, that ends up being a really huge play. And some fortuitous defense. You had a line drive in the eighth off the bat of Pavin Smith that could have easily scored the tying run, but went right to the glove of Bryce Terang, and you turned that into a double play. You had Sal Frelick flying into the stands for the last out of the game off the bat of Corbin Carroll to get Trevor McGill the save. Drew Rahm ends up getting the victory. He only got one third of a he only retired one batter, but he gets the victory, his first with the Milwaukee Brewers. You had Aaron Ashby not pitching great. Abner Uribe pitching pretty well. He had to come back for a second inning. Got a little dicey there at the beginning, but he ends up getting through it. So again, it was a tightrope. They managed to hold on and win the series 3-2. The Brewers, their hitting and scoring position continues to be a big issue. Like, despite the record this week, their offense just has not found that big hit over the last, now I would say, 5 weeks. And that was the case. I think they were 2-for-49 with runners in scoring position over the last 2 weeks. Since you know, leading up into that hit that Joey Ortiz had that got them a 3-1 lead. So that is not great, but you'll take the wins. Of course you will. The pitching continues to be very good. Obviously, Brandon Woodruff is one of the big stories of the week. I talk about that with Todd Rosiak. At the end of my conversation with Todd, is when you're going to hear from Kurt. He got to sit down because he was in Arizona covering the Brewers. He got to go over to the Arizona complex and chat with Frank Chiron. That is a left-handed pitcher out of New Jersey who was selected by the Brewers in the 2025 draft. He was one of their top picks, and people who follow the minor leagues know this. He was in a really serious car accident on January 1st of this year. Another driver ran a red light, or I should say a stop sign, plowed into his car. His girlfriend was in the car as well. Both of them sustained some pretty bad injuries, him in particular, and was not clear in the moment how bad we were talking. Was not clear if he would walk again or regain consciousness in the very beginning, let alone play baseball. And here we are in July, early July, and this week he made his first professional appearance. He pitched an inning in rookie ball. Really, really cool moment. And Kurt got the chance to go chat with him and get his perspective on the whole thing. And just an amazing story. Just honestly a miracle that he pulled through to the point that he is able to stand on a big league mound, or I should say a professional mound, or affiliated baseball mound, and pitch. So obviously they're still going to work cautiously, ramp him up. I don't know how much workload he'll get here in the 2026 season, but that is obviously very good news. He is regarded still as one of the top prospects in this organization, one of the top 30. If you ask MLB Pipeline, I think that is ambitious. He's a high school arm. You don't really know where that's going to go, regardless of whether or not he's in a very serious accident. But right now there's some really high hopes for what he can do with that left arm of his. So the next Major League Baseball draft taking place later this week. So that'll be going on. The All-Star game is coming up. Obviously, Todd and I spent a little time talking about that. So hopefully you enjoy this edition of Micro Brew. Thank you for listening, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon. Here now is Todd Rosiak, my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers the Milwaukee Brewers, and he was checking in here this week, watching as the Milwaukee Brewers won 4 of the first 6 heading into that Sunday game against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Overall, wins and losses, just like, in my opinion, a lot like last week. Good week on paper. And still plenty of things to feel, you know, not great about. The clutch hitting was still kind of not great, given that they, again, weren't facing a real tough gamut of opposing pitchers. But by far the biggest story is what happened on Saturday night. Brandon Woodruff again leaving the game early with dead arm, I guess. It seems like the catch-all, wasn't able to use his fastball. Not even his changeup was hitting 80 miles an hour. Taken out of the game, immediately placed on the injured list heading into Sunday. And gone for probably, a few weeks. It's not something we know a lot about just now. Probably a cyst in that shoulder, that surgically repaired shoulder, which is something that has cropped up already once this year. Todd, this is a blow. Now they have starting pitching. They do. So it's not like they're completely out of options. It's more just what it meant. The possibility of getting a full strength Brandon Woodruff back. He looked great for a couple of these starts. He was throwing 94 miles an hour. He threw six perfect there into the sixth with a perfect game against the Reds in his first start back. And you start to dream on what this rotation looks like. And now you lose that guy. I don't know if you always thought that was going to happen. Like if you felt a little, maybe I kind of felt like it was a little bit of a ticking time bomb. Like, is this really something that's going to be here in October? But it is still a devastating loss to know that you're not going to have him now for a few weeks. So what are your thoughts as you see Brandon Woodruff back on the shelf?
Yeah, tough, number one, just personally for him, I'm sure, to have gone through almost 2 months of rehab and everything, and then to have this happen again, you know, three starts in, certainly frustrating. And, you know, based on Pat Murphy's comments on Sunday morning, his surgeon, Keith Meister, said initially that this cyst could pop up again, and it did, clearly. And, I'm no doctor. I don't have any, inside info as far as the medical stuff goes. But, it was almost 2 months between, getting that cyst drained and then Brandon Woodruff being able to take the mound again in a major league game. If that's the timeline that we're working with right now, I mean, that doesn't look good, get him back in what's early September or something like that at this point. So it's just tough all the way around. Brandon Woodruff has been a soldier trying to get through this and kept a stiff upper lip and positive and just doing everything that he can do to get back. But sometimes the body just doesn't cooperate. And it just seems like that is the case at this point. He's been able to put together sporadic starts here and there. It makes you think that he still has it in him, but the shoulder ultimately doesn't hold up. So, who knows what the future holds for him. Certainly the Brewers would love to have him back and pitching the way everybody knows that he can pitch. But if that shoulder doesn't cooperate, it's just not going to happen. So in the meantime, it's good news that Logan Henderson and Coleman Crowe are both, getting kind of to the final stages of their rehab. You got a little bit more depth there. It's not tremendously experienced depth, but it's still depth. You've got Robert Gasser that you can utilize as well in the mix. So there are arms in there that you can use, and all of those guys have had their moments this season. So, I don't think all is lost at this particular point in time, but you certainly feel for the individual and Brandon Woodruff, and you had hoped as a fan, I'm sure, that he would be able to sustain this over the rest of the season, and obviously he's not going to be able to do that now. So the question just remains: how serious is it? Is he going to have that cyst drained again? Are we talking about the same timeline, et cetera, et cetera? But certainly for the immediate future here, Brandon Woodruff is back out of the equation.
Henderson had his second rehab start on July 4th on Saturday, and it went well enough that the Brewers are preparing to have him in the rotation, like you said, sometime very soon. His next start will be with the Brewers, and it will probably be this week when the Brewers have 8 games in 7 days before the All-Star break. You already knew Robert Gasser was probably going to get called up to be the 27th man in that doubleheader on Tuesday. So again, they have the guys. I think it's more just I just think there's like this for Brewers fans. It's like, sort of like, can this really go on? Are they going to pull the plug on Brandon Woodruff? Is it something that they can remotely count on? And I guess my thought is, no, you probably can't count on it. I think it's worth trying to come back again and see if he can contribute in September and October. The only tricky thing here is If he isn't able, it seems like part of the equation here is he has to go a lot of time in between starts. That was the case last year. So it's not like you can count on him to be a reliever because he's not going to be able to go back-to-back days or twice in 3 days or anything like that. You really just need him to be a starter. And you wonder how many bullets are in that arm. I guess I also think about the player. Like, he's just never going to get this big contract that his career deserves because he's been hurt so much here over the last few years, going short term in these deals with the Brewers. And now I can't imagine next year he's going to, you know, maybe he comes back next year too. Like, probably it's going to be a good situation if he does for him. So that's all the stuff that's rolling around in my brain. I feel like this Brewers team will be fine without him. Starting pitching wise, Brandon Sproat has started to look pretty good going into his start on Sunday. So Shane Drouin's done the job. Like, they have guys. It's just, they're all so young, man, and they're going to get to the playoffs and they're not going to have anybody except for actually Jacob Mizrowski, who has any sort of experience whatsoever. And that was purely, you know, last year. Like, that's it. And I don't know if that's a concern in your mind that the Brewers can go very young into a postseason, but it is something they're going to have to deal with, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, like you mentioned, Jacob Mizrowski had those several really good appearances last year in the playoffs after being knocked out of the rotation at the end of the regular season. Beyond him, you know, Kyle Harrison, Brandon Sproat, the guys that we just talked about, Robert Gasser, he got a little bit of run, but not competitive appearances.
No, it was bad.
Logan Henderson, Coleman Crowe. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a concern when you've got a group of guys, Shane Drouin, that just haven't done it. You know, does that preclude? Does this? If Brandon Woodruff, if you can't count on him, you know, can you start looking at, well, maybe the Brewers are going to have to trade for a starter now at the trade deadline? It's possible. You know, you can maybe throw that into the equation as well. Picking up an experienced arm, we all know those are not cheap, and the Brewers are not crazy about trading away prospects, as we know too. So yeah, I mean, it complicates things for sure in many respects, but still a long way to go. A lot of games left to be played. You know, Brewers are in first place in the Central, as they have been for a while. The Cubs are, you know, had a couple of tough games here recently, but have been playing really well otherwise. You figure it's going to come down to those two teams again. Maybe the Cardinals can stay in it, the plucky Cardinals, but I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how everything kind of plays out here over the next couple months.
Brewers also just a couple games, two games ahead of the Braves for that number two spot, a very important spot in the playoff hierarchy that would get them a free pass through the wild card round. So that's obviously something they're going to want to keep an eye on. Brewers are in great shape. Like we said on the last podcast, we can nitpick because they're going to go to the playoffs, barring a 2014-like collapse, which I'd like to think we're probably never going to see again. They're going to go to the playoffs. It's just a matter of, you know, now looking at will they be able to be fine-tuned enough to really make a competitive push to the World Series? And Brandon Woodruff is certainly one of the guys you'd like to think would be there in the World Series. Mentioned Jacob Mizrowski. He is an all-star, a National League all-star. We found that out this week. We found that out on July 4th. Not a surprise whatsoever. The news really is that he's probably not going to pitch in that all-star game. Pat Murphy revealing they wanted to get Mizrowski two more starts here remaining. So that will be one in the St. Louis series and then one in the Pittsburgh series, which will put him right up against the all-star timeline. He'll pitch on Sunday. That means he'll get replaced almost certainly on the roster, maybe by Kyle Harrison, who was not named an all-star reserve. William Contreras, kind of surprising to me, was the other Brewer player named. Only two Brewers, no Bryce Terang, no Kyle Harrison, no Jake Bauer sneaking in there. As players come and go on this roster, I imagine there's a pretty good chance we'll hear at least one other name. Harrison would probably be my pick there, given that he's a pitcher. But real quickly on the all-star stuff, did it surprise you to see only two players? I was surprised that Luis Arraez was the choice over Bryce Terang. That's probably the player's vote, selecting that backup second baseman behind Ozzy Albies. So that one really did surprise me. But anything else jump out at you?
Yeah, the Arraez one for sure over Terang. You know, looking at the season that the Giants have had, and they already had, Logan Webb in there. Looking at social media, people do such a good job of putting comparisons together and tweeting them out. And I saw one last night where Kyle Harrison's numbers, you know, compare him to Logan Webb, Kyle Harrison almost in every category. It was better in the first half than Logan Webb too. But we know there's other things at play that come into the, you know, choosing these teams and all that stuff, and it's not an exact science. But yeah, I mean, it kind of is what it is, and you know, hopefully for one of their sakes, Terang or Harrison, whoever it might be, however it shakes out, I would expect the Brewers probably to get one more guy in there, most likely Harrison. But you know, the all-star voting, as we know, is a very inexact science, and every year, because you know, the fans choosing the starters, it becomes more and more of a joke, in my opinion. You know, these guys that are getting into the starting lineup, you know, Bryson Stott over Bryce Terang because the game's in Philly and Philly has crazy fans. It's, I don't know, I don't necessarily agree with it. I don't think that it's right, but it's one of many things that probably we could change in baseball for the better. But that's above our pay grade, and we can't really make those decisions. So it just kind of is what it is. Jake Bowers would have been a great story. And I realize it was kind of a long shot, but you guys having a great year. And just the whole backstory about how, you know, just never really kind of lived up to the expectations that were set out for him in the course of his career, bounced around to so many different organizations. And Bob Nightingale's story on him a couple of weeks ago from Las Vegas was tremendous, just about, you know, Bowers literally just kind of coming to the end of his rope mentally and just learning how to just let it all go, let you know, like just kind of float in the ether and just live in the moment. And it's working for him. The guy's been the, you know, best run producer on the Brewers so far this season. So it would have been cool to see him in there, but at the very least, he's having a great first half, and hopefully for his sake, he can carry it over to the second half and complete a full successful year.
That man's going to get paid, Jake Bowers. We're a ways away from talking about it, but his offseason should be a lucrative one, yep. Whether that's returning to the Brewers or not. The Brewers might have an opening because Andrew Vaughn theoretically could be cut loose. We'll see how that goes. I don't know. That's a interesting offseason discussion, what they will do with those two guys who have both been very, very good. Probably not all-star caliber, but still very, very good. Just looking around the rest of the league, it doesn't surprise me that they weren't really in that mix, but really good stuff from Bowers this year. Garrett Mitchell, not an all-star. In fact, probably not close to one. Very confounding player, as we've discussed. Confounding, I feel like, is the word I use to describe him all the time. He had a great, great week. I think he had, was it 10 hits and over the course of four games or something? He had a triple. He had a three doubles, couple home runs. He very narrowly missed on the cycle Wednesday night when one of his two doubles in that game hit off the top of the fence. He also had two, in my opinion, great base running plays coming home from third base to score in a close game. One of those he was called out, even on replay. We might talk about that in three up, three down. The blocking the plate, the replay of it all. I mean, he was safe. It doesn't matter, but whatever. Just great stuff from him. And coming through now where he is past his career high for games played in the season, at bats in the season, he had a kind of a scare where his hamstring, it looked like it acted up on him, and he came right back the next game and has kept playing through it and seems like he's not worse for wear. It was just a hamstring cramp, but still, anytime injury is mentioned with Garrett Mitchell, you get worried about it. And he has just toughened. He's just been great. He's been really great lately. Great defensively as well. I don't know if you're seeing anything different with him or this is just like him at the peak of his powers. You know, after 1 week, you can't get too excited. He's just too much of an enigma where you could say to yourself, wow, he's turned a corner. But Todd, if he's turned a corner, this lineup gets a lot scarier. If you've got your number six, number seven hitter hitting like Garrett Mitchell, that is a weapon. What have you seen from him so far?
Yeah. Well, I think we're seeing a player who is finally healthy and gaining tremendous amounts of confidence with every game that he plays. And you've seen it in this last week. We all know that Garrett Mitchell has tremendous physical gifts. Pat Murphy said a couple weeks ago that he's probably the most physically gifted player that the Brewers have on their roster, which is saying something because they have some pretty darn good players, of course. But when you take all the different facets of his game, you know, he's kind of a five-tool guy. The whole problem has been staying on the field, and so many of those injuries are just over the course of his career have been very fluky. And then you throw in the type 1 diabetes, which prohibits, you know, really quick healing. That plays into it as well. And finally, the gods have shined down on him and smiled upon him and allowed him to take the field most days, and he's producing. And I think back to that very first road trip of the season in Kansas City, where he had his first homer, drove in all five runs in that first doubleheader win that they had over the Royals. And Pat Murphy saying after the fact that, you know, hey, I was wrong about this kid. I didn't want him on the opening day roster. I didn't think he deserved it. You know, the front office basically told me, you know, this is going to be best for the roster. I'm sorry, you know, like I messed up. And that was big of Pat Murphy to admit publicly at the time. And talking to Garrett Mitchell months later about it, you know, he said he appreciated those comments, but he also always believed in himself and his talents. And it was just a matter really of staying the course and getting that good luck to stay healthy. Now, you know, when he had that cramp, I was off that night, but watching the game at home, and I was just like, oh man, are you going to be kidding me? Like thinking the worst for him. So it's great to see that it really was just a cramp and he's back out there. And now he's just stringing together really good game after really good game. And like you said, to have a guy like him hitting sixth, seventh in the lineup every day is really great. It really lengthens out this lineup. And I don't think we've really seen all facets of his game yet. I don't think he's really shown us what he can do defensively. You know, he's been really good defensively. I don't think he's quite there yet this year. You know, we know he's very fast. He hasn't stolen a bunch of bases yet this year. So I think there's areas where, you know, certainly improvement can be had. We all know the strikeouts are the big thing with him. He's got to get better at that. But then again, you know, that just may be kind of his bugaboo. And over the course of his career, he's going to be a guy that's going to strike out a ton. But certainly when you look at the rest of his production and what he can bring to the table on an everyday basis, you can live with that, I think.
We have seen an uptick in strikeouts from a lot of guys on this team. Yelich, Christian Yelich, Bryce Turang even, who has kind of worked his way out of the slump that he was in. But, you know, he's not alone in the strikeout department. And he just brings such a rare skill set, like how hard he hits the ball. You have to kind of be forgiving of some punch outs because the way that he can change a game, the way that he has a couple times already this week. I loved the day after his cycle, near cycle. You know, he missed the home run. And then on Thursday, he hits a home run. It's like, man, if we could have just had that at bat the night before, you would have had a pretty exciting thing. Yet another cycle against the Cincinnati Reds. That is something specifically Christian Yelich has done, but that seems to be a recurring theme for the Milwaukee Brewers. Let's go to the left side of the infield. That's a place that's been a lightning rod situation for the Milwaukee Brewers. You got a couple guys over there, Joey Ortiz, who I think has hit the ball quite a bit better, at least anecdotally with what I've seen. He hit a rocket on Saturday night with the bases loaded that just happened to be right at a fielder. Otherwise, that could have changed the course of the game. He has this Monday night game where he homers and also makes a really slick defensive play, a couple defensive plays over the course of the week. He definitely seems a little more confident, but it's hard to find him a spot out there. I think if the Brewers had their druthers, it'd be Hamilton at third and Cooper Pratt at short. Cooper Pratt has struggled pretty mightily. We knew that was going to happen. We suspected it. I think the hope here is that Cooper Pratt wasn't going to fall below the Rengifo line, you know, the guy that they ended up jettisoning. You'd like to think Cooper Pratt could outperform that. That has not happened yet. I think it will. I think it's good that he's here. I'm very comfortable with the team's decision to bring him here. But I can imagine at some point people are going to get a little bit, you know, like uneasy about it. How long does Pratt's leash end up going if he's struggling after the All-Star break into August? Like when do the Brewers have to look at that again, knowing that there are other shortstops in this organization, including the guy who's playing at third base, playing elite defense at third base, who can also do the same at short. Give me your whole thoughts on the left side of the infield. I mean, Cooper Pratt's playing good defense. It's not like he's not living up to that end of the bargain. So what are your thoughts on the guys that they have over there, and what do you suspect the Brewers will do going forward?
Yeah, well, at this point, Cooper Pratt is their shortstop. He's got a very long leash. Certainly he's struggling. As you mentioned, I think pretty much everybody expected. It's common. He's a rookie. He's going through everything for the first time. At the very least, as you mentioned also, he's been playing very good defense. You know, other than that, it's been kind of a struggle at the plate. And it's been interesting to watch Joey Ortiz really get comfortable over at third base the days that he's there, just making some outstanding defensive plays. The guy can pick it no matter where he's at. There's no question about it. And I do agree that he has been hitting the ball harder, more consistently, but really the results have not been there in the end, which is frustrating. Certainly – David Hamilton, I think, you know, he is what he is. He's a guy that on a really good team, he's a nice depth piece. He's a guy you can plug in there and not lose a whole lot. He gives you a facet with his speed and everything. Defensively, not super strong. Obviously not a lot of power, but can bunt. So I think what we're going to see over the next, you know, month or so is just a continuation of what is going on right now, just kind of shifting those guys around, working the matchups, and keeping fingers crossed that Cooper Pratt discovers it and gets on a hot streak a little bit. I'd like to see a little bit more slug out of him. I know the Brewers, you know, Pat Murphy in particular said at the very start that that's going to be a process. You know, it's the slug is going to come after a while. But overall, you know, just again, kind of is what it is. You'd like more out of those positions, but they're kind of in a trick box at this point. There's really nobody in the minors else that you can really look at. I mean, Jet Williams, but he's never played in the majors before. You bring him up, you know, is he going to kind of fall into that Cooper Pratt trap where, you know, you're going to go through struggles with him as well? Is he better than what you have on the roster currently? Probably not. So, you know, kind of going around in circles here, but I think there's still time to kind of let things play out. See what happens, and then if you're getting closer to the deadline, you know, we're what, a little bit less than a month away from the deadline, then maybe you start thinking about making a move.
Yeah, I mean, I guess theoretically Williams is a shortstop option. I don't think that's what the Brewers want to do. He has not hammered the ball around in AAA. Jesus Madé, of course, everyone knows is in AA, but they just can't bring him up this year. He would have a similar learning curve. He's still 19 years old, and you'd start his arbitration clock hoping that he's better over the last stretch of the season. And you know, they've invested a lot in Cooper Pratt. They believe in him as the guy, and obviously a few weeks is not going to change things. I think he just needs to hit a home run. He mentioned that. That'd be nice, something nice to get out of the way. I think he just needs to do that. We know that he's in it, that he's not a power hitter, but we know he's got that in his bat. He's going to hit many home runs, and it would be nice if he could get off the schneid a little bit. Maybe that'll loosen things up at the plate for him. He had some real bad at-bats middle of the week, seemingly a little bit better in Arizona, but he was chasing a lot out of the zone. Pat Murphy gave him a day off, his first day off, kind of gave him a half day off before that to kind of just, you know, let things settle down a little bit for him. Meanwhile, Joey Ortiz made one of the best defensive plays I think I've seen the Brewers make all year, maybe the defensive play of the year at third base, where he made like an Ozzie Smith-like stop on a ball that was short hopping as he slid and got an out at second base, got a force out. He is impressive. He is an impressive player, and I think that plays into why fans are chanting his name on Monday when he hits the game-winning home run in the eighth inning. You know, you hear the chants of Joey, Joey. I would imagine that doesn't happen for a lot of guys who are basically the worst offensive player in the lineup, and that's kind of what Joey Ortiz has been, but he still, you know, he still has a little bit of juice. Brewers fans willing him to win. That was a really cool scene. I really like that. One last thing before three up, three down. William Contreras, again, all-star, has had a nice season, I would say. Not the best we've seen from him, but good. Really, really solid. His pitch calling has been interesting to me, and it's hard to sort of put a blanket question like, what do you think about William Contreras' pitch calling? Which is ultimately what the question is, but every game is different. Every pitcher is different. I thought with the Jacob Mizorowski start this week in particular, going to the cutter instead of just letting him eat with that magical four-seam fastball, allowed the Reds to put up a lot of runs on him. It was one of his worst outings of the year. And I feel like this has been a recurring theme with him. It feels like he just maybe doesn't have a great handle on what you're seeing from the batters in terms of their quality of swings on certain pitches. And it just seems like the Brewers have been prone to throwing the wrong pitch in the wrong situation from time to time with Contreras behind the plate. But I know the manager still loves him. Everybody raves about what he can do defensively and how he handles the pitching staff. So I don't really know what to think. I feel like he's probably good. You know, maybe not great. Maybe he is great to some. I don't know. Can you answer that question? What do you think of William Contreras' pitch calling, if that has struck you a certain way this year?
No, I cannot. Sorry. I get paid to watch games, and I think I know baseball and everything. I can't delve into that. I mean, I can see the common man, you know, thinking about, you know, why would you not stick with Mrs. Strengths and, you know, why not throw 100 fastballs, whatever. But I can't begin to dive into guessing why William Contreras calls what he calls or argue with it one way or the other. That, you know, I mean, he's an all-star catcher. There's reasons for what they do. There's reasons for the pitch that that they call for certain pitchers, and it just kind of is what it is. I'll leave that to the experts. Maybe Kurt can answer that more than me, but I'm not comfortable even diving into that because I don't. There's just nothing that I can add that would be educated, quite honestly.
All right, Kurt Hoge, you heard it. If you are listening in cyberspace, Todd Rosiak called you an expert. So perhaps that is a conversation we will have on the next episode. For now, let us do what we do every week, and that is go into some of the more granular details from the week that was. Here it is, three up, three down. Todd, if you want to go first, you can. We got a long list of things that happened this week. Some really cool stuff, some weird stuff, interesting. I don't know. Do you want to give it a shot first, or are you good?
I have one that wasn't on our list here that pops to the forefront of my mind, and it's not involving the major league team. It's involving the minor leagues. Frank Chiarone taking the mound for the Brewers in the Arizona Complex League. What a story. Those that aren't familiar, high draft pick of the Brewers last year. I believe he was second round, or maybe he was a comp pick. I can't remember, but he was a first day pick and gets involved in a tragic auto accident. Was hit. He and his girlfriend were hit and suffered just horrific injuries, including a traumatic brain injury. And there was real question about whether he was going to be able to really function normally again, from what I understand, and made it through the rehab. He had a post on social media kind of talking about this whole situation, and a little less than a year later, here he is taking the mound for the rookie Brewers in Arizona. What a story. What a comeback. And certainly rooting for the young man. Hopefully he's able to continue the progress that he's made, and I'm sure the Brewers are very excited about that as well. But just the kind of a story of the human spirit and being able to come back from something so devastating is just great. So hats off to him and his comeback attempt.
Funny you should mention that, as well as Kurt Hoge, because that is the interview that will be coming up after this conversation. Kurt Hoge was in Arizona covering the Diamondbacks and hopped over to the Arizona Complex where he chatted with Frank Chiarone. So a little bit of interview there coming up after this. And it is an amazing story. It's amazing that he is alive, and it's fascinating that he is pitching in July, 7 months after suffering a crazy, crazy, series of injuries in this car accident. One inning, very uplifting stuff that he's able to get back on the mound and throw one inning this week. It's honestly mind-boggling, actually. For me, let's see. Number one for me, we'll go to that Jacob Mizorowski start, because I know there was some chatter about how it was scored in the fourth inning when Jake Bowers was given an error for dropping a ball on a throw. David Hamilton, who I talked about Joey Ortiz's defense, David Hamilton made a couple like near identical bare hand plays in that game. Just incredible, incredible defense from the third baseman. David Hamilton did not play third base before this season, like in his career, minors or majors. I don't know how he just picked it up real fast. He makes a good play, but Jake Bowers drops the ball. What ends up happening is that the Brewers end up giving up. Mizorowski gives up four runs in that inning that are all unearned, because the bulk of them happened with two outs, which in the eyes of official scoring means that they shouldn't have happened. The inning should have been over. All of this, is not real. They're all unearned runs, including a three-run homer by Jose Trevino. Four runs, as you can imagine, will carry a lot of weight as you're parsing through these very good ERAs in the National League Cy Young race. So I know a lot of people were like a little suspicious that the Brewers would call that an error and happen to give their guy four unearned runs. I did a video at this for jsonline.com. If you're interested, going into greater depth, the bottom line is like the official scorer is Drew Olsen, full disclosure, a guy I like and I'm friendly with, but he did everything right. The call was made after some deliberation, some like replay review or whatever. And the call was made that it was an error before any of the runs scored, before anything followed. It was a very close play at first. So the controversy could be, well, was the runner going to be safe? Because then that's the drop ball doesn't matter. He should have just been given credit for a single, and then all these runs end up being earned. I think the call was correct. I think he would have been out. You just don't know it because there's no umpire ruling. They didn't have to rule safer out because he dropped the ball. But I do think he was going to be out if the catch is made cleanly. I do think it was an error. Right call. Yes, it ends up giving Mizorowski four unearned runs instead of earned runs. I do think he's still the best pitcher in the National League right now. His ERA would still be 1.82 instead of 1.47. I think that's fine personally, but just an interesting play that I know a lot of people are going to be bringing up again as we get later into the season, if it's still, you know, if his ERA is still really, really ridiculous like it is.
Yeah, I missed the game of the year at home the other day with Dane Meyers smashing into the wall, and also one of our press box colleagues, Jack Stern. I worked that game. I was at that game. Sorry, I cover games, and they all kind of run together. So we'll talk about both of these. Dane Meyers' thing was incredible. I mean, just ran basically full speed into the wall in center field. Hauls in that fly ball and then has to leave the game on a cart, which was incredible that he didn't dislocate his shoulder or break anything. He wound up having a shoulder contusion and going on the IR. But, man, what a catch by that guy. And then Jack Stern catching a foul ball and back into the press box with a fishing net. What a guy, and what an effort by him. He tries every time, and there's quite a few balls that get hit back into the box, believe it or not. And this other night, I forget who hit it. I think it might have been Trevino. Jack snagged one, so good for him. He got a little bit of airtime on the TV broadcast. I encouraged him to keep the ball. 99% of the time, we throw the balls back to the kids out in the crowd. I said, Jack, come on, man, keep it. That's a once in a lifetime moment. But being the objective journalist that he is, he tossed the ball out to a kid. So good for Jack. That was a fun moment.
Jack Stern has been using this net for quite some time. At one point, I think it was last year, he tried to catch one. He ended up falling backward in his chair. It was quite terrible. The net has not yet reeled one in until this week. Immediately, they identified it on the broadcast, TV and radio. It was very exciting to see Jack Stern finally reel one in. Huge for the press box. Now, unfortunately, Josh Maurer, who is, of course, one of the radio people, not as successful in Arizona on Saturday. Now, there is a good video of this, which might be good news for Josh, because a foul ball came up into their press box. He did, in fact, fall backwards trying to catch it. There is, like, video where you can see his hands just not quite get to hang on to the ball, and then he kind of disappears out of the frame. I think this happened on the radio, so they admitted it right away, what went on. Very funny stuff, and RIP to Josh Maurer. That was a real tough scene. I think he will live it down, though, because there isn't clear-cut video of him falling backwards. I think he maybe dodged a bullet there.
I will say, you know, like all the games I've covered in Milwaukee over the years, I've never been hit by a ball in Milwaukee. I got hit by a ball in Houston, of all places, years and years
ago. Weird.
And my computer got hit in spring training in Maryvale probably 5 or 6 years ago now by an ex-Brewer, no less, Brad Miller. I forget who he was playing for at the time, but he hit one back and it hit my screen. Those balls come back really, really fast in Milwaukee.
100%.
And I think you're very stupid, you know, like not to call Jack Stern stupid, because he's not, but I think you're really risking it by trying to catch a ball. Now, granted, he was using a net, but things can go wrong and you can either get really embarrassed. I mean, there was a time I can remember I always try to either duck under the table, put my screen down and duck under the table, or wheel, because these chairs have wheels, wheel one way or wheel the other way. And I remember one time probably 6 or 7 years ago, I panicked because I looked up and the ball was coming, and I tried wheeling this way and the chair turned and I fell like basically flat on the floor. I didn't get hit, which was the main thing, but it was kind of embarrassing. I actually had video Adam McAlvey helped me out with back in 22 or 23, something like that. Willie Adames hit a ball back, and I ducked just in the nick of time, and it left a big hole in the wall right where my head would have been behind me. And they put it on the broadcast, and then MLB Network picked it up, and I was on Quick Pitch that night, and they did a whole little segment about it, and I tweeted out a picture of me sitting in front of the hole. And I still have that on my phone, and that's like my big claim to fame now. So I like to show off and show people that. But it's no joke. You have to be, you know, you're engrossed in what you're doing, you're writing, you're working, but you have to know where the ball is. And if you're not cognizant of that, bad things can happen. And even in very high press boxes, Cincinnati, back when Cincinnati had their press box in the old spot, a lot of these ballparks, the press boxes have moved because of financial considerations. Cincinnati's old press box is one where I never would have thought a ball would come in, and one made it up there, and one smashed the laptop of a writer. So it doesn't really matter where you are. Maybe Pittsburgh and Washington, I would say, are about the only two places where there's no prayer. You're just too high. Texas, too, now that the new ballpark. But otherwise, you always have to be cognizant of where the ball is, because one wrong move, if you don't know where it is, it can smash your computer, it can smash you, and it's not good.
I mean, you really only get like two or three in the press box. Not even that. Maybe more like one to two again anywhere in the press box, the radio. Like, it's not very common, but yes, my rule of thumb has always been as a press reporter.
When I would sit, like, even if a basketball is coming your way and you're sitting on press row, let somebody else get the ball. You don't want people to know your athleticism. That's at least my personal ethos. Let somebody else get the ball. Don't try to be a hero. It's especially true in baseball. I want nothing to do with it.
You can look cool, but the chances are way, way, way higher you're going to look like an idiot trying to catch it, or you're going to hurt yourself or something. And again, you know, like, for our jobs, these are very valuable. If we can't type, we can't write. So that's not good to break a finger or break a hand or something like that, or get hit in the face with a ball. That wouldn't be good.
So my actual number two, to go back to three up, three down, is the outfield defense that we saw on Friday night in Arizona. You saw some crazy catches. Mitchell made one of them in extra innings. It was just a nice snag. But the big ones came during, first off the bat of Mitchell. We praised his offense. He honestly should have had another three-run homer, but it was an incredible catch by Lourdes Gurriel going up into the stands to rob a home run, which would have made it 6-0. The Brewers would have had a 6-0 lead. Instead, their lead was only three. They go back into the bottom half of the inning and then give up three runs. So it's 3-3, which of course carried into extra innings. But Jackson Churio then got his own steal of a home run off the bat of Gurriel. So it was just a wild night for home run theft. You know, Ortiz made another really good play. There was a lot of good defense in that game. It was a kind of a stupid game offensively for both sides, but the Brewers end up winning 7-3 when Arizona kind of collapses in the 11th inning. They throw the ball away. It was a weird, wacky game. The Brewers were fortunate to get the W, but some great, great outfield defense. How about you for number three, Todd?
The bullpen has been interesting to watch. When you get beyond the obvious, the big names of Trevor McGill, Abner Uribe, Aaron Ashby, Chad Patrick, down in Arizona, we had Grant Anderson step up and deliver a nice outing on Friday, and then Craig Yoho of all people on Saturday.
Awesome
that has
stuff.
To bode well. I mean, obviously you want to see these guys string some more of these outings together, especially Craig Yoho, I would say. You know, just kind of based off the fact that he's torn it up in the minor leagues the last couple of years, but really has not taken advantage of multiple opportunities at the major league level. So, you know, with some of the injuries that they have going on right now and in the lack of depth beyond the leverage spots in the bullpen, the Brewers could certainly use more outings like the ones they got from Anderson and Yoho. So, it's going to be a little bit here before D.L. Hall gets back into the mix. I think they're still talking the end of the month for him. So in the meantime, they're going to have innings that they need covered, and they can't keep running these same four guys out there. Of course, you know, Aaron Ashby will pitch 200 innings if you let him out of the bullpen. He told me at the start of the year, I believe, if I remember right, his goal is 110 innings out of the bullpen, which would be unbelievable. But he's a guy that has said time and time again, he feels like he's best when he's pitching frequently. So we'll see how that all plays out. But hat tip to Grant Anderson and Craig Yoho.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated to know what this bullpen looks like in October, because I feel like it's those four guys you mentioned and a lot of question marks. Drew Rahm is back here with the team, having been called up to replace Brandon Woodruff. I mean, I don't think Drew Rahm is going to be a factor. I don't know if Garrett Stallings is going to be a factor, but these are guys that they need innings out of right now, especially as they continue. You know, they're almost one more week to get through this crazy stretch of 18 games in 17 days. But, you know, they desperately needed what they got from Craig Yoho on Saturday night. Recalled earlier in the day with Joel Kunal going on the injured list, which we haven't mentioned, with a shoulder impingement. So really, really important to get him
pitching like that, 2 2/3 innings that he threw of just excellent baseball, retired every single batter he faced. Brewers pitching was actually really good on Saturday in one of their losses. Jared Koenig had a little blip, let a couple guys hit the ball hard in a row, and that was kind of the difference. That fourth run ended up being the difference in a 4-3 loss for the Brewers. My third and final, what do we got? We'll go back to a well that we always go to, and that's Aaron Ashby getting another win. He got number 12 on Wednesday. He continues to lead the National League in victories in this stat that I don't think anybody truly cares about anymore. But every time the Brewers players give an interview, they talk about how we want to get Aaron Ashby to 20 wins. I don't think they're just saying that. I mean, obviously they can't control the circumstances that allow for this to happen, which is Aaron Ashby frequently pitching late in tied games or games where they're down a run or two. And then the Brewers going out and scoring late. The Brewers have been pretty good at scoring late. I think they legitimately would love to get Aaron Ashby to 20 wins. They would absolutely consider that a major success for the 2026 season. I don't think they're just goofing around when they say that. It is within reach. It is still highly unlikely, but he's going to end up with 15 or 16. And we're going to look back on that and be like, it's one of the best win-loss performances in recent Brewers history. It's so strange, so weird, and yet indicative of what Aaron Ashby is providing to the Milwaukee Brewers. He was exceptional on Wednesday, and he had another good outing in the Diamondback series where he left and the Brewers were tied, and there was a chance they could have given him a 13th win. So 12-1, Aaron Ashby doing work. It's wild. It continues. This Raptor run, Vulture run continues. I say Raptor because I think of course, Brent Suter, who was another guy that won a lot of games in relief. All right, what didn't we talk about in 3 up, 3 down? Abner Uribe fought through illness to have a really good outing in that same Wednesday game. He apparently was not feeling well and was spending a lot of the game not in the bullpen, but he comes in, pitches very well. We did see a lot of weird base running this week, particularly Friday. David Hamilton was tagged out. Second and third, one out. One of the many ways the Brewers have not been able to hit with runners in scoring position this week. He got tagged out running second to third, and then that became a double play, and they threw over to first base. It was a very weird base running blunder. Cooper Pratt had a really bad bunt that led to another out at third base in a similar situation. Garrett Mitchell forgot how many outs there were, was running from first to third on Thursday at American Family Fielding. You know, when Sal Frelick flew out, he got thrown out. So some weird stuff. This is a very good good base running team, but that was some weird stuff. Also, DL Hall just had a child. He's getting better. He's not close to return, but he is on the mend. Just had a daughter whose name is DL Hall. They named her. I wrote it down and then forgot where I put it. The actual name. But the initials Drew are in fact Lane. DL. What is it?
Drew Lane.
Drew Lane Hall. Congratulations to the Halls. Another DL in the family. That's very funny. And yeah, I think that's it. That's what we got here on 3 up, 3 down. All right, let's go back in time. Let's go back in time as we do every week. It is my weekly segment on Brewers history, and it is Remember When. Todd, I always like to ask where you were when this particular event happened. This is July 2nd, 1963. I don't think you're going to be able to tell me about what you were doing July 2nd, 1963. Is that correct?
I was floating somewhere in the ether of the universe, still 8 years away from being born, but yes.
It's wonderful to imagine being able to float to the ether of the universe. This was interesting to me because it was July 2nd, which was 63 years to the day of what we saw on Thursday at American Family Field, which is Jacob Mazurowski taking on Chase Burns of the Cincinnati Reds, a big-time starting pitcher, you know, high-profile starting pitcher matchup. We're probably going to get that again if the rotations hold, where Paul Skeens and Mazurowski will match up on Sunday, the last day before the All-Star break. So that's something to keep an eye on, assuming there's no rain or anything throwing the schedule off. That could be really interesting. It also means both of them won't pitch in the All-Star game. But going back 63 years is one of the all-time great pitching duels in Milwaukee baseball history. It's Milwaukee Braves, and it's Warren Spahn at 42 years old matching up in Candlestick Park in San Francisco with Juan Marichal. Both of those gentlemen, of course, easy calls for the Hall of Fame. They pitched every out of a game that went into the 16th inning that the Giants won 1-0 on a Willie Mays walk-off home run. Speaking, of course, of Hall of Famers. unbelievable. This is obviously not something that could happen today. Warren Spahn threw 201 pitches over 15 and a third innings. The 201st is the one that finally ended the game. Marischal threw 227. Spahn allowed 9 hits. His only walk was an intentional walk, actually, to Mays in that previous at-bat before he had the homer. He only had 2 strikeouts. 15 and a third, he only had 2 strikeouts. Meanwhile, Marischal allowed 4 walks, 8 hits, and 10 strikeouts in 16 innings. The game lasted 4 hours and 10 minutes, which actually doesn't sound that bad in the pre-pitch clock, when you consider it's 16 innings. Marischal was 25 at the time, taking on this 42-year-old version of Warren Spahn, who obviously was still very, very good at what he did. He's a guy who pitched until he was 45, I believe. I'm not actually sure, but he was a guy who really thrived late in his career. It was the record for length in a shutout. Well, actually, the record for most innings pitched by a starter in a shutout had been 18 innings, and that was 30 years earlier. Carl Hubbell had done that. It was just one of those remarkable games that I think older fans definitely remember, even though it ended up at like 2:25 in the morning in Milwaukee because it was played in San Francisco. So people had to be staying up late to follow that incredible battle. Willie Mays also threw a runner out at the plate in the fourth inning. That could have changed the trajectory of the game quite a bit. Warren Spahn himself almost homered in the game, ended up settling for a double, and then, of course, did not score. I believe it had been 27 and a third innings that Spahn had gone scoreless before he gave up the hit. And when he issued that intentional walk, he'd gone 31, almost 32 innings without giving up a walk. Sounds like Willie McCovey hit a home run in this game, another Hall of Famer, that went over the foul pole and the umpire ruled it foul. They did not believe that was true. They believed that that was, in fact, a home run. That also would have changed the trajectory of the game. But all the same, we got one of the great pitching duels in Milwaukee baseball history. Warren Spahn, Juan Marischal on the anniversary. Well, yes, 63 years later, not a round number or anything, but that anniversary where Mizorowski faced off with Chase Burns. We did not get a similar game between those two guys, but still a fun matchup all the same.
I'm kind of bummed out. I was looking through my phone here because I actually spent a fair amount of time with Warren Spahn when I was in my 20s. And I also met Juan Marischal, and I have pictures with both of them, and I can't find them on my phone. But I do have some good ones that I could show you.
Ooh. I would love to see.
That's me and Sandy Koufax right there.
Yeah, you got to raise it just a little higher. There we go. Look at you hanging out with the left arm of God.
Koufax, and let's see who else. Carl Yastrzemski.
Why were you hanging out with these people?
Dave Winfield, back when he was playing, obviously.
Yeah.
Brooks Robinson. Look at my glorious hair back then. I did have hair at one point.
It is beautiful, Todd. It's beautiful.
Trying to see. These were at autograph signings and such. Here's a you guys will like this one. Teddy Higuera and me.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Trying to reduce the glare.
Yeah, that's definitely in his prime, Teddy Higuera.
Armin Killebrew.
Ooh. Man, have you met every Hall of Famer, Todd?
Joey Meyer, Hawaiian Punch.
Every Hall of Famer plus a couple guys, yes.
Yeah. No, I've been fortunate over the course of my life to have been around and been able to meet some really tremendous baseball people. Here's a cool one.
Our audio listeners are loving this.
Willie Stargell.
That's a good one.
Yeah, actually got him to sign it. So, yeah, I mean, those were the good old days. And, dang it, I wish I could have found that one of Marischal and Spahn. But, oh, well, you get the idea.
You know, Warren Spahn lived until 2003 and 82 years old, had a nice long life, came to the last game at County Stadium. You know, he was around for that. Just incredible to think that he knows what Miller Park looks like. He probably was inside of Miller Park at some point. And obviously one of the great pitchers in all of baseball history, pitching way into his 40s. Wild stuff. All right, let's close this thing down the way that we do every week. And that is, here it is with Todd's Take of the Week.
This moment to throw out a shameless plug for an upcoming story that I will have on the website. I'm not sure what day yet or what day it's going to be in the paper, but here we are. We've gone, what, how long have we gone here? 45, almost 50 minutes, and we have not had one word about the upcoming Major League Baseball draft.
Oh, that's true. That's coming up this week.
Yes, which is coming up, begins on Saturday. So it's kind of weird that they're conducting the draft while the games are still being played and everything in the first half, technically.
I never understand this.
But we did a Adam McAlvey and I did a nice sit-down interview with Todd Johnson, who's the amateur scouting guru for the Brewers. And Brewers are in a little bit different situation this year than they have been in years past. They only have two picks in the top 100 this year at number 25 and 66. Rounds 1 through 4 are going to be conducted on the first day, Saturday, and then the rest of the draft will take place on Sunday. Brewers did have 3 picks in the top 100, but of course they sent number 67 overall to the Red Sox on February 9th in that Caleb Durbin trade, and I would think that everybody would be fine with that, considering what they got back, Kyle Harrison, Shane Drone, and David Hamilton. And that's essentially what Todd Johnson says, too. Last year, of course, the Brewers, I think, had 5 first-day picks, and they would have had 6, but they traded one of those away in the Quinn Priester deal. Again, you understand why they did that. But Todd Johnson still feels confident that they'll be able to get a couple of really nice players. Yeah, on the first day of the draft, well, throughout the draft, but particularly with those top 2 picks, if we look at the Brewers' history over the course of the draft, I think it's pretty safe to guess that one of those, at least, is going to be a college hitter. Would not be surprising if one of those college hitters is at the first pick, number 25 for the Brewers. But other than that, the Brewers have the 6th smallest bonus pool this year, a little over $8 million. So that also is going to kind of hamstring their attempts to do what they did, signing guys like Cooper Pratt and so forth to above slot deals. Going back to last year's draft, they had an interesting, they did something kind of interesting where they signed their 11th rounder, a shortstop, CJ Hughes, for $700,000. And then they set a 19th round record, giving right-hander Chase Bentley $757,000 for a 19th rounder. And anything from after the 10th round, typically you are allotted $150,000, and if you go over that, then that's charged to your bonus pool. But they gave Chase Bentley $757,000 to forego a scholarship to Texas A&M. So just another something to watch for. That the story, I think, is pretty good. Kind of breaks down everything that the Brewers will be looking at, kind of what the draft looks like in general. And in a week, I'm not sure if it's going to be me or Kurt, probably me, since Kurt will be in Pittsburgh. So you and I can recap the draft a little bit and go over what all happened.
Yeah, it's an insane week. You've got the draft, which I'm sure I'll be helping you out with on that, of course, like you said. They've got the 5 games in St. Louis with a doubleheader on Tuesday, then 3 games in Pittsburgh. It's kind of the recurring joke in, if they always play Pittsburgh right before the All-Star break and always goes poorly. And I say always. I think there's just this example in 2018 that lingers over everything. But that's coming up. And then Kurt's going right to Philadelphia for the All-Star game. He's going to be there where Jacob Mizorowski, William Contreras, maybe others will be in attendance and playing for the National League. So there is a lot to go on. You've got the draft, the futures game with Jesus Madé, and Luis Peña will be involved. So so there is a lot to discuss. Todd, before I let you go, I forgot to further talk about this play where Garrett Mitchell was ruled out at the plate in Wednesday night's game, where there were 2 things. He was safe, but also the they were reviewing to see if he could block the plate. Do you feel, Todd, if there's a play at the plate that you could describe to somebody who doesn't know the rule about blocking the plate, what that looks like? Because right now I feel like I have no idea what that looks like.
No, I can't tell you anything about anything when it comes to replay, when it comes to blocking the plate. It's just, it's mind blowing to me and I'm not quite sure, again, because I wasn't working that game. There was an explanation provided by the replay officials after the fact. And I'm not sure if that was provided after request by the media. That's kind of my guess. But my whole issue is, they're trying to do the right thing with replay. As we all know, we watch these replays and we see something that looks like stone cold evidence that the guy's out or safe, and then the reverse happens and you're just like, what are we doing? What are we looking at here? I just think that baseball needs to be more transparent, needs to be more open and explain this stuff, what they're seeing. The one thing that fans do need to remember is that at MLB headquarters, where they're doing the replays, they're privy to camera angles that none of us have. You know, they're looking at, quite honestly, I think like 10 different angles of every play, and we're only seeing sometimes two or three. But if that's the case and they see something definitive on one of these replays that people in the stands don't have access to, people watching at home don't have access to, explain that, tell us that. And that, I think, will kind of help eliminate some of the frustration that fans have when you're watching a play that just looks so obvious and then the ruling goes the other way. You know, the blocking of the plate thing, again, makes you scratch your head. His foot was clearly in the way of the plate. You know, there's the argument of, well, the throw brought him into that lane while he's still blocking the plate. So, like, how do you rule that? I don't know. It's just it's one of those things that you just kind of scratch your head about, and it's okay, on to the next play. There's nothing you can do about it. It's frustrating. And again, it's one of those things that I think baseball could do a better job of explaining.
He is Todd Rosiak. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. As we've been speaking, the Brewers Sunday game has begun. It has gone very poorly to start with for Brandon Sproat. Hopefully the message I give you at the beginning of this podcast, which will be in the future and my past, your past, I don't quite know how that all works, we'll have told a different story by the time this one's over. But thank you for listening to this episode of Micro Brew. Now we will get to my interview. Well, not my interview, Kurt Hoag's interview with Frank Chiarone, the Brewers minor leaguer who made that triumphant return to the mound after suffering a car crash in, I believe it was January 1st, back pitching already in July. Pretty cool stuff. We will enjoy that. And we will be back with you again next week. It'll be me and Todd again. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.
Just to start, just tell me about what it was like pitching. Getting back to the mound, pitching this week in a game action. Were you nervous? What were the emotions around it?
Yeah, I was kind of feeling everything, a little bit of everything. I remember the beginning, and then after that, I don't really remember much. Kind of blacked out for a second. It was pretty cool.
Is that usual for you when you're pitching? Like you just kind of forget about all of it, or was this a different...
Not really. I think it's just because I haven't been out there in so long. I was just super amped, though.
Yeah.
Got the first one out of the way, so.
Mm-hmm. How did it feel?
Felt
normal?
Yeah, I was going to say it felt same as usual. Okay. I feel like I didn't really miss a beat.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool to be out there.
How has, like, the last, whatever, you know, this year put baseball in perspective? How has, you know, your mindset toward the game, has it changed at all? Like, how do you kind of view the whole everything now?
Yeah, I'd say it definitely changed. I definitely don't take anything for granted now. Mm-hmm. You know, tomorrow's not promised. It's kind of changed everything.
Yeah.
From the little stuff, coming here early, stretching, anything, mm-hmm. anything it is.
Just
definitely changed my perspective, but I think it's for the better, mm-hmm. so.
Could you take me through just like the, since you got here, the buildup of what you had to do to just get back to a place where you know your body was ready to pitch?
Yeah, I'd say it's been about 2.5 months, maybe closer to 3 months, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's been super slow, which I understand. It's gone from just having to catch at 45-60 feet,
mm-hmm.
to obviously now I'm pitching at a game. But I like what they're doing, taking their time. I think at first I was a little bit frustrated, obviously. I just wanted to get going. But now I clearly understand. If I were to pitch a month or two ago, probably would have
done something. Yeah. I was just going to say, was it ever frustrating or like just so slow that you're just like, oh, I want to get out there?
It had its moments where I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I'm doing this again. Mm-hmm. But
what was the most challenging part of rehabbing?
I'd probably say the physical stuff.
Yeah.
Considering I was in the hospital for so long and mm-hmm. lost X amount of pounds, it was pretty tough at first.
Yeah.
Took a toll on me, but...
How long were you in there?
So I was in two separate... The first one was a hospital. The second one was considered like a rehabilitation.
Sure.
Still kind of like mm-hmm. a hospital, I guess. But it was around like a month. I think I left January 28th.
Okay.
I don't really...
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a lot going on. Did you ever, I mean, were you ever, like, doubting that you'd pitch?
No.
No.
According to my mom, and I don't have any really recollection of the hospital, but according to them, I was in the hospital standing on med balls trying to throw it in there, but I'm sure I didn't.
You're a pitcher.
I just wanted to leave.
Yeah.
Get back here.
This is what you always wanted to do. Right? Yeah. What do you want people to know about your journey to get back to this point? Anything in particular that really stands out with you?
I don't think I'd really want them to know anything specific. I don't really like to.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Not details. Yeah.
I'll throw it out there, but maybe just. If there was one thing people had to take away, just kind of, like I already said, maybe change their perspective a little bit, realize how lucky they are to do X, whatever it is. That's really it.
Yeah.
Just kind of take a step back and observe kind of what's going on, and you're in a pretty good spot no matter where you are. Pretty lucky to be where you are.
Has this tested your perseverance? Like, did you know you were kind of a tough son of a gun that could,
I mean, I'd, know, I'd
endure
say
something
so.
Like this. Yeah,
I'd say so. I'm from a state, people might say, maybe a little gritty state. Yeah. We got all four seasons, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like this was a pretty solid test for me.
Yeah,
it was a breeze though.
What do you want to, like, just in terms of pitching, be on the mound? What do you want to get out of this year? Are there goals, or is it simply like I'm back, and that's enough?
I was gonna say at first it was. You know, oh, I want to pitch in a game. I want to leave here, this and that. I'm just eager to get out of here, do stuff quick. Mm-hmm. But now I've kind of, you know, take a step back, realize obviously it's going to be slow. Mm-hmm. I'm already out there pitching a game, which is pretty incredible itself. Whether I'm here or wherever I'm at, I'm just going to try to go out there, throw strikes.
When did your mindset kind of adjust to that, going from like the, you know, the very eager and wanting to do it all to...
I'd honestly say it kind of varies. It has its moments.
Sure.
But probably didn't really take much long.
Yeah.
Where I realized it's going to be a while.
When you first report... When did you first report? Remember? When you came back here?
Was it in April?
End of April. Yeah.
I think it was like the end of April.
Yeah.
So like Christmas for you?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Was it just like a big, big deal to be... to be here?
Oh my
a big
god
step
yeah,
to
when I first got here, I was looking around making sure it was all real. It was pretty cool to be back here.
How quickly, like, did your body, like, remember, like, respond to, oh yeah, pitching, like, this is what I do, like, if you picked it back up?
Like I said, apparently I was in the hospital trying to throw balls, and like as a joke, but at first it was pretty rough, you know, the weight stuff. It was pretty rough. But then, just like this, within a week or two, I was getting it back.
Yeah.
It still took some time.
Do you remember when you started throwing, back home?
Yeah. When did I start throwing? I think it was, like, middle of February, end of February. Wow. Yeah, that was very rough.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do you remember, like... Was it frustrating, or were you kind of just happy to be?
It was very frustrating because that's when I was just ready to get going, and it was just super. I was just super bummed out.
Yeah,
I'd be in my facility back at home. If you watch the videos, I think there's a video of me throwing online. It looks like I'm just going through the motions, but I'm physically trying to throw as hard as I can.
Yeah,
I just can't.
Yeah,
I just can't.
Now to think about the progress, though, that's kind of. Insane.
No, yeah.
To
I think it's pretty neat.
I was talking to Tom Flanagan. He said you threw 90.
Yeah, that was not much longer after, maybe month and a half, 2 months.
You were already throwing, like, back to your regular velo?
I'm a little bit down still.
Okay.
But I think it's normal.
Oh.
Can you solve the workload?
Yeah.
I'm not really worried about that.
What is the fastest? Do you know the fastest you've...
Since,
like,
I've been...
Ever thrown. I'm sure.
I think I hit 95 at the combine.
Okay. All right.
There's some 96s out there, but I don't know.
Sure.
I'll just say it. 96.
Yeah.
Sounds cooler.
we'll round up. Who are the people back home that you were training with?
Baseball Performance Center, it's called.
Okay.
I have a couple close guys there, Mike Adams, mm-hmm. Jake Kinzel. There's a bunch of guys there I still talk to.
Sure. Whatever. You've been there for, like, just been with them for
I'd say years. It was, like, 2.5 years.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, I'd say around there.
Mm-hmm. Big picture, does this, like, feel crazy at all? To, or does this feel like this is, you know, what you're always meant to be doing?
It's pretty crazy. You know, when I'm in the game on the mound, I'm like, I'm just pitching the game. But then after, and I sit down and realize, like, no, that was pretty cool. It's pretty neat. Yeah. I'm already back out there.
I mean, at any point did, like, I'm sure, you know, you dream pitching the big leagues, being the big as well. Did that ever waver? Like, were you ever wondering, I don't know if I'm going to do that? You always...
I don't think so.
Never question.
Just a little setback, a couple months.
Yeah.
I think I'll right back where I was.
just a little setback. All right. Yeah.